Welcome to the podcast series Talking Success, connecting the global fintech community. I'm Stacey Jafta, and today I'll be chatting with Nuno Sitima, CEO of Mia Wallet. Mia Wallet is a Norwegian company in the center of excellence within mobile and digital payments and mobile wallets, providing state-of-the-art certified technology in 18 countries. Nuno, how's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How's your day been?
It's busy. I think everybody's back from vacation and cleaned up their mailboxes. So it's like second week of September. It's like a wave of things coming up. But it's good. It's good signs.
Talking about cleaning up your mailbox, I think it's really funny. I always do to-do lists in the beginning of my day. And one of them is like getting my inbox to zero. And it's the most satisfaction that one can get is just seeing you've read all your emails, you've put them into folders. I'm also really into organization, so that for me is just fun.
No, I've used like the email clients very similar to how Gmail works.
Yeah.
So I never worked in an environment with folders.
Really?
Yeah, never. Because actually, in the old days, I was an Opera user from the old days, and there was this email client called M2. They're very similar to how Gmail works, right? Without the folder structure. So I have relied on search forever.
It's very
interesting that when I thought, I had a couple of colleagues that joined that came more from like Microsoft Outlook, etc. I couldn't relate to it.
That is crazy. I could not imagine a world without files. Search function has to be top notch for that to be efficient. But Nuno, I'm really excited to dive right in. Hear more about your career journey and ultimately what led you to become CEO of Mia Wallet.
Yeah, so just a bit of background about me. So I'm Portuguese originally, but I've spent half of my life now in Norway. So like I said, you know, I've been domesticated by Scandinavia during all these years. I started my career actually I used to work for an international organization called ISAC that, you know, after, you know, business school, doing international internships, you know, multicultural understanding around the world. And by chance, I ended up here in Norway. There was never a big plan for that. And at the time, actually, so this is 2001 already. So I'm giving clues about how old I'm getting. and then Opera used to be a partner of ISAC. So a lot of people, a lot of interns at Opera. So Opera was a Norwegian company with not really any business in Norway. Just it was founded in Norway and so brought people from all over the world to Oslo. And so I started as an intern at the time, 2002. I started there, and then I stayed there for many, many years. So all the way from an intern to the exec team in the end.
Wow, that's unheard of.
Well, actually, in Opera, even the current CEO, he started almost at the same time as me as an intern.
That's also fantastic.
So we had quite a few group of people. I think. You know, I think it was a great place to work because, you know, we got people from all over the world to join, and it was a quite entrepreneurial company. Like every 2 years or year and a half, you were doing something new, and a lot of new people joining all the time and doing business all over the world. So I think it was a great school. And I think, you know, I think some of the values that the founders put in the company at the time, I think they really valued also loyalty to the company and people that, you know, put on the shirt kind of thing. So that was actually a very core value. Even today, like the founder of Opera made a new company called Vivaldi. And I think I have a feeling 80% of the people working there are ex-Opera because they are so loyal to him. I might have the 80% wrong, but it's quite many, I would say.
That's fantastic.
So I think those values stayed with me, actually. I really value that people have like loyalty, passion for the company they work for. So I spent many years there, did many different things, spent a lot of time in Silicon Valley. And then Opera Mini launched and became very big in so-called emerging markets, you know, Southeast Asia, Africa, South America. So I spent a lot of time expanding our business there, both developing and leading the product to be more adjusted to those markets, but also doing partnerships both with internet companies and telecom. So many different things I did.
Yeah.
There, always in product and business development and, let's say, go-to-market strategies.
Yeah.
And then after Opera was acquired and listed on NASDAQ, Opera went from many different owners and situations through the years. But the last 2-3 years there that I worked, I started doing fintech. So the new owners came in and they looked at, we had a lot of users in Africa. And then they said, okay, are there other services we can launch? And then I started work on the fintech space, both on micro-lending a bit, but the big project I had was to start OPay in Nigeria. So I did that for a while and then moved more to M&A strategy. And then around 2 years back, I decided it was my time in Opera was kind of done. I had done everything and that I needed to do. And I had a very nice, comfortable, strategic job, but I decided I wanted to. I miss actually driving the business every day, having my team, etc. So then I had the opportunity to join as CEO of Mail Wallet. So that was very interesting. The company had been acquired by a VC fund out of Norway. They needed somebody to bring some new energy and re-energize the company and think about, a company that had a really good technical team and a good product, how to scale that. So then I decided to take on that challenge. So it's been good. I started last year, we doubled the team already and a lot of new products in the pipeline.
How weird was it working for a company like Opera for years and years and years and then going into a brand new space, probably new culture, new way of doing things? How was that for you?
I think it was actually easier than what I thought, to be honest. But I think that has more, less a self-brag, let's put it like this, but more, more I think, the Opera culture. Opera was extremely entrepreneurial and flexible company.
Mm.
When you have always worked with people from, we used to be like 45 nationalities here in Oslo. Opera was, the founders was very Scandinavian company. Then we grew and had a lot of people from other parts of the world. In the end, Opera was at the Chinese owners. So you can imagine that although it was called Opera, it was not the same company. And so when I was there for quite many years, and I would say the company, I feel like I worked for 10 different companies in that time. Yeah. With one benefit that you were there, right? I think the benefit is that you don't have onboarding, right? You just change roles and adjust to new situations, but you have to be productive from day one. So that I think actually prepared me a lot to move. And
Fair point.
And I think the company I started now, the culture is a bit similar in the sense that, we have management here in Oslo. I have then the half of my management team here, half of my management team in Riga, in the Baltics, and that was very similar to Opera, where we had Norway, Sweden, Poland, so with engineering remote. So I also was a bit picky in the company I chose to join, right, that I felt had the culture and setup that I could contribute to.
You were an intern and made your way up to the exec team at Opera, which in these days is so uncommon. I've noticed a trend amongst the youth hopping from job to job every 1 to 2 years. They're a bunch of different opinions on this. Ooh. I've heard some saying, use your youth to find what you want, and others saying the youth lack the idea of loyalty and perseverance, which is something you touched on earlier. What are your thoughts on people getting disqualified from jobs because of hopping? And do you have anything to say to those early in their careers that are maybe doing this?
Yeah. So I feel very fortunate that I joined a company that I really fell in love with, right? With Opera and everything we had. So of course, not everybody gets that situation. But if I look at, I think when young people start in their career, I feel very old saying it like this, but my advice is a bit, I think people have to use their first years to develop their skills, I saw a lot of situations of people, because they get a bit of a pay rise, etc., they just change jobs all the time. And of course, now I'm talking about people that work in our sector, right? You work in technology, you have good education and good roles.
Yeah.
I saw sometimes people overthink a bit salary before, in their 20s. I think my advice is more, be in a position where you can actually develop things and work. Because if people are changing every couple of years, I think it's really difficult for them to get really deep responsibilities. You just do the math, right? You hire somebody, first 6 months, the person is not really productive.
They're learning.
They're learning, etc. Then you are productive for a year and then you leave. Let's say you have a 3 month termination. So that meant that you had, 1.5 years of productive work in that company. Unless you really feel stuck, or unless you feel, okay, this is a great opportunity, I think there is a lot of value to spend a bit more time. Like, I spent a lot of time in one company and I had many discussions with myself if I should have changed or not. So I don't think I am the rule, because I think maybe it was a bit too much. But remember, the company was acquired a few times and changed ownership. So it was, in a way, not the same company. But I would say jumping every couple of years, I am a big negative. I personally am a bit negative to hire people that do that.
Yeah, you'll not look. Will you not interview them?
Well, it depends, right? If it's somebody that is in their third, fourth year of career and they changed after 2 years, I think that is common, right? Because it's first job, you don't know what's happening, and you might change. But let's say if I see somebody that in the last 8 years had 5 jobs, I wouldn't, even 3 jobs in 3 years, I would say it's not something I feel very comfortable, because it just creates a situation that if I'm going to invest in somebody, and then it's a big investment, right? You bring somebody on board, you train them, you groom them, you support them. And then when they become productive, they just leave because they can get a bit more money somewhere else. That is very, very difficult, I think, for a company and for a manager. Right?
Yeah.
Because the cost of getting new people is very difficult. So that's just a bit my first kind of reaction. But there's always situations, right? Why do people leave? And you can deep dive into that. But I would recommend people think more about what skill sets am I gaining, and can I have 3-4 years of productive work? That's what I feel like when I break down my career. Yeah. This is what I felt my 20s were. I started working fairly young. I was 22, 23 when I joined Opera. And I think the first 6-7 years, they were really crucial in educating me, because I started as assistant product manager. Then I moved to business development after 1.5 years. And then I had 4 or 5 years really doing partnerships. And that really taught me a lot. And I could be, I could be good at my job, if you understand what I mean, right?
Yeah,
I knew what I was doing, and I could contribute a lot to the company, and that's the reason why then I could, I knew quite a few years back that I had a path to reach the executive, because I knew I'd proven myself.
You also, as you mentioned, had different positions. You even started Opate from scratch, which is something I'd love to get deeper into. You had to help them get licensing, building teams from zero. And there are so many different ways to get into a regulated market. There's partnering, acquiring a business, applying for a license, and not everyone needs their own license. How do you know which path to take? And do you have any advice for those looking to get a license?
Oh, that's quite a good question. So I think depends the situation where you are, right? So when we were in Opera and we incubated Opay, of course, we were in a NASDAQ traded company with funds, etc. Then the decision was, what's the fastest path to market kind of thing. So when we did our analysis, we understood that there was a lot of, let's call it, parked mobile money licenses. that people were not proactively using. So we could acquire a company and go through the process to get approved for a new license, etc. We also knew that at the time, the Central Bank of Nigeria was not issuing new licenses. So in a way, that was the only way if we wanted the license to get it. And that is something, you know, and I know you guys have a lot of listeners in Africa. I spent quite a lot of time doing licensing in Africa. That was very, very interesting phenomenon I saw. And this is not just Africa. I think most central banks in the world, I saw the same in Europe.
Yeah.
If you are looking for a license, one thing is what the regulation says, but you have to understand what is the political willingness of the central banks to issue new licenses. So even if by law it says, okay, you know, if you want a license, this is how it works. I think people misunderstand sometimes that the role of the central banks is to regulate the market also and control the market in certain forms, right? And sometimes, although the law exists that you can apply for a license, it might be the political environment that at that time the central bank is not interested. And I give an example. So I know that in Nigeria at the time when we applied, when we acquired a company from Telnet, a company called Paycom, the central bank was not interested in launching new licenses because there was like 15, I don't remember the number, but I'd say quite many licenses that were given that were not being used. The central bank has also had introduced new capital requirements. So their focus was that people that had licenses started using those licenses and that they capitalized the companies. So I think it's important that if you are starting a project, you know, and I always find central banks are very open. If you just book a meeting, go talk, people will tell you what's going on in that environment.
So that, why so do people sit on licenses?
This is a phenomenon. I think it's speculation, to be honest. Because, you know, a lot of times central banks, they open to say, okay, now we want to... A lot of these things are attached to financial inclusion drives. So say, okay, we are going to drive financial inclusion and we need more money providers, for example. So they say, okay, now we are open. And then many people apply. I think some people apply because they really want to do something. Some people apply, they think they want to do something, but they don't know how. And then they cannot get and they cannot get funding, right? So, you know, they apply, but then they actually don't know how to get it off the board, or they don't get funding. But I think there's also just speculators, right? People that apply and with the objective to selling it. I'll give an example. So the one we bought from Paycom, so Paycom belonged to Telnet Group that started InterSwitch. So InterSwitch was, I think, started by Telnet.
Yes.
So they were using it, but in a very narrow fashion. So they were using it for the Nigerian bottling company, if I'm not mistaken. So they were using it to pay salaries there. So they were using the license, but for a very narrow use case. And for them, I don't think it was so profitable because you need scale, right? So it made sense for them to use the license, but they never scaled the business. So I think, you know, they were a very good partner and they were very happy that we could take it. And I remember even the person that today is still the country manager of Opay in Nigeria, he was the BU leader for that company, Paycom. It was one of my first hires. So for me, it was great because I both got a good partner locally that knows the market very well, and I also get my first hires from there, both the head of engineering and the country manager. So for me, it was almost like a perfect solution. So that was our situation. Yeah. So I would advise that. First, understand what is the climate and who have licenses and if the central bank is issuing licenses. What we see also is that a lot of times licenses require a lot of capital. To start, because you know, the central bank needs to make sure that you actually have money, right? If you deal with fintech, especially, which can be difficult for small companies. But then I think people should more look into partnership. Look into partnership so somebody can sponsor you, quote unquote. So this means
What's the pro of doing that?
So the pro of doing that is that you don't need to apply for a license, right? You can get a bank or somebody with a license to let you use their license. of course, the cons is that you are a bit dependent on your partner and you might not own the users, right? So,
interesting.
But it's a good way to get started while you apply for your own license, right? And you get a partner there. So I think a lot of people are looking into this. And I think this is one of the things that I saw. I spent a lot of time in Africa, like I said. And I think the banks in Africa, I would not call the banks, there would always be exceptions. So just take it with a grain of salt. But the majority of the banks, they have very poor retail presence. That's why mobile money is so popular, right? Because it's hard to find bank branches and services.
Yes.
So I actually think there is a huge opportunity for banks to partner with fintechs, because I think banks are not so focused in doing agent networks and services for the majority of the population. And I think a lot of fintechs have amazing ideas, you know, in the remittance space, in the micro lending space, in the mobile money space, in micro insurance. So there are so many areas that I think that if banks create an environment where fintechs can partner with them, everybody can win there. So I think that would be quite important to contribute to the development of the ecosystem.
Well, thank you for that. That was really helpful. I have learned a lot from this portion. And something I would really love to hear more about and learn more about from you is the product space. And the reason I'm asking this is we've had many fintechs reach out to us expressing their struggle with finding product people as they're so high in demand. What do you believe makes someone good at product development? And what do you specifically look out for when making a product hire?
So I think the number, there's a couple of things I always look for. One is the, you know, passion for the product that you are hiring towards. And now I'm talking in the context of let's say, startups or scale-up companies. A lot of people that are product managers, some of them are more administrators, if you can call it like this, you know, they know how to run a process. But I think if you have a smaller company or a scale-up, you really need to bring somebody that is has a huge passion for the product that you want to build. And then they have a great ability also to problem solve, because what I see in the product development of smaller companies is that there is no manual there how things should be done. You need to find creative solutions for your product and problem solving. So those two things for me are really, really important, that people have that culture of getting the product to market, not to follow a process that is super, you know, formal and super theoretically correct kind of thing. Because I think the product manager, you know, I see it's almost like the CEO of the product, right? He or she needs to understand everything. Needs to understand, you know, how the market works. Needs to understand what features can resonate with users. Needs to understand metrics. So I think that's what makes it very, very difficult, because you are actually asking for a, you know, almost like the CEO of your product for this kind of companies. For bigger companies, sometimes product managers are more managing the development process, which is a bit different process. But for me, that's the most important. Problem solving and passion for what we are building is really important.
Do you believe in case studies? So I know that there's a few businesses that we work with that like to give candidates case studies to see how they think. You were talking about problem solving. How can you relay that in an interview or really dig deep? Is there anything specific you do when interviewing to help you identify the right talent?
I think for me, it's a lot about case studies work sometimes, but I would say there is more to understand other skills, in my view, like communication, ability to abstract concepts and communicate those concepts. So I think seeing how a product manager presents is really important, because they need to be the ambassador of that product internally and externally. You know, they need to be able to talk to the board and explain what they are building, at the same time, they need to discuss with an engineer where we are going at, right? So it's quite a broad spectrum. Yeah. So I think case studies are good for that, just to see how the candidate performs in explaining what they want to do. The problem solving, I like to go more through that with real examples and trying to understand a bit what is their attitude towards things.
Are there any questions you ask in interviews that you've found to be just, this is the question I love to ask. I love to hear people's responses. I have a couple of clients that have really interesting, unique questions that almost have nothing to do with the job. But is there anything you ask that you feel is really unique to yourself or something you ask almost in every interview?
I always ask, and I don't remember who it was, but I saw this being done in my previous job. I always ask, you know, from their current team to describe me the person they like the least to work with. And it's nothing personal. It's not about is a person rude or not rude, but more like, you know, what are the things that really tick you off?
Yeah.
And also if they can describe what people don't like about them, like, you know, who's the person. And this is really interesting. And I do it is not to
that is such an interesting question.
And it's not really to understand if the person is good or bad. It's more that I know myself and the things, how I am, right?
Yeah.
How I communicate what... It's like, if you come to me with a lot of theories and models, I don't listen. I can't. My brain does not work like that, right? A lot of people love structure, you know. You're talking about your folders. I cannot relate.
Yes.
Right? My brain is very chaotic. So for me, of course, when you build a team, you need to have different combination of people. But there's one thing about culture, right? And I mostly want to understand, can this person work in a culture where a lot of things are not super organized kind of thing? Because I will always prioritize, you know, moving things forward, then spending a lot of time in internal systems. I think that there has to be a level of, you cannot control everything.
Yeah.
And you need to be agile on things. Otherwise, you are spending more time, you know, in an internal system than doing your product and building your product. Especially systems outside. So the only systems I care about is engineering and sales. Everything else, you know, and accounting and finance, of course, that has to be in order. But what I mean is, like, let's spend a lot of time on HR systems. Let's spend a lot of time on, you know, it's, I think it's, how do you say, it comes in stages kind of thing. That's more what I'm saying. You need to take some decisions. So I think for me, it's just to understand what do people expect. If people expect to join, the onboarding is fantastic. They get a manual. Some people expect those kind of things, right? It's more that for me, because I don't want people to join and be unhappy, right? So that question is more for that. Because if the things they really detest about others are things I can recognize in myself or in key managers, then I know we are setting ourselves for problems and, you know,
sure,
not giving a fair shot to that person.
I find this very interesting because it's almost come up on the last three episodes talking about structures, talking about fintechs, whether you're a fit or not. And I think the consensus is as the bigger you grow, obviously you need to have more processes in place, but this is not a couple of thousand business where you have a process for everything, a system for everything. And if you need that, this is just not the business for you.
It's like, I always laugh, like when people ask me, I say that when I was discussing joining this job, and then people say, okay, Opera has businesses everywhere. How did you guys grow? Did you open an office and things like this? I said, no, we hire a business development person.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. You know, and then if there's some business, then we can look into other things. But I always say, you will never hear from me that, you know, if you work for a company that the first person you hire is the receptionist or personal assistant, then you are in trouble. A lot of companies are like that, right?
Crazy.
Yeah. Or get an office, right? Yeah. Why are you getting an office if you don't have any business?
That's
so
true.
So I am very like, I think I have some cultural things that I think I have a lot of respect for the money of investors to not spend it in things that are not core to the business sometimes.
Beautiful. Nuno, thank you so, so much for being on the podcast. I had a laugh here and there and learned a ton. So thanks again.
You are welcome, Stacey. Always a pleasure.
Awesome. Where's the best place for listeners to reach you?
Just LinkedIn. I've tried many times to get a social media presence. I don't have the diligence for it or the patience. So contact me on LinkedIn. Either for personal stuff or even for, you know, if you guys, we do digital payments in Mayo Wallet and we have a SoftPOS product coming up. So if you are interested in the digitalization of payments, we can have a chat about that also. That's my plug for the company.
Love it. Thanks so much again, Nuno.
Okay. Have a great day, Steve.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Talking Success, Connecting the Global FinTech Community. Feel free to follow us on LinkedIn at Talent in the Cloud. And if you're interested in exec talent, expanding your team, or you yourself are looking for a new exciting change in your career, check out our website, talentinthecloud.io.